I'm Emma, and this is the Creative Edition. Our mission is to inspire creatives to discover, grow, and own their brand. All right, friends, I am so excited to have Jessica Whitaker on the podcast today. She is a photographer, an educator, a YouTuber, all around amazing creator, and we're going to be diving into her journey as a photographer, as well as building her brand and business. But before we jump ahead and learn all about Jessica, let's kick it off with the question of the day. And the question of the day is, what was the last photo you took?
So I actually have a pretty good answer for this one. If we're thinking about iPhone and realistically the last one, I just got back from a trip to New York last night and I was there on vacation. I typically am there for work for photography clients, but there was this really cool, I think it was St. Patrick's Cathedral. There was this really cool peony installation on the outside of it. So that was the last photo that I took before we left, and I'm pretty proud of myself for having a good answer to this, because typically it would be like, a gym selfie or something like that.
I love it. It's so funny. I actually didn't know the last photo I took, and I wrote the question of the day, and I look back at the last photo I took on my phone, and I made a HelloFresh recipe last night, and I sent it to my family, because like, I'm not a big cook, but when I do cook, I'm like, look at me, I'm cooking. And so, that was the last photo I took. It's chicken, green beans, and some garlic bread. Yeah, very good. All right. So we'll go ahead and dive into today's conversation with Jessica. So Jessica, for our podcast listeners, can you share with us who you are, where you grew up, and where are you currently based?
So my name is Jessica Whitaker. I'm a photographer based out of Seattle and then also New York City. And I also teach photography to beginners online through YouTube and then also through my Facebook community, which is now bled into a podcast called Build and Bloom. And we used to, back in 2018, do a lot of in-person events that were free. A big passion of mine is being able to provide free educational content without the fluff, just to make photography more accessible to people, because it's one of these incredible mediums where we get to merge something like art with a business that's low barrier to entry. So since it's a low barrier to entry, all you need is the basic skill set and knowledge of how to use the camera, and then people skills, which is really what I teach on YouTube, posing. And then with that, you're able to turn it into a business, even if it's just on the weekends, or if you're going to do it part-time or full-time, and make that extra income to put towards your student loans, to save for a vacation. It's just an amazing way to be able to have a stream of income without having to have years and years of schooling. So it's very accessible. And there's a lot of ways where you can get cameras nowadays for a more affordable price point than maybe 10 years ago. And so I'm really passionate about helping people be able to change the direction of their legacy, to get them out of a harmful living situation, or be able to equip single moms with a new skill that can help them with their kids. So I really love it, and I love teaching, and that's a bit about me.
I love it. So when you kind of look back at your life and career so far, have you always been creative, or was this something that you discovered much later in life?
I've always been creative, and when I was in high school, I decided that I was really interested in fashion design, and so I did 2 years of a trade school doing fashion business and design. And then I went to a year of school in New York. And that's how I was introduced to New York and how I realized it wasn't so far out of reach for me to be able to live there if it was through school. And so I went there for design. And while I was there, I would do photography of my classmates. And at the time, when I was taking photos of my classmates, this is when blogging started to kick off. And a lot of people were dabbling into it and incorporating their Instagram accounts in it, because this was 2014. So I'd always been doing photography since middle school, but I never considered it as a career because I was so focused in on doing something in the realm of fashion. And then I decided that I didn't like it. I moved back to Seattle, which is where I'm from. And then I finished my degree here and I just did a random liberal arts one. Basically anything that, basically the degree that could take all of these random design credits and I could actually use it towards finishing school. And then I was doing YouTube for a while throughout design school. And then I tried to post, I tried it out by posting a YouTube video on photography behind the scenes because I had a friend who was like, can I come and shadow you on a shoot? And I was like, sure, like, if you, do you actually want to try, like, can you record it? And then I could maybe make it into a video. And that's kind of where it kickstarted. And I was already pretty knowledgeable about social media platforms and how to do like social media marketing and what was the formula, at least at the time, to make a viral video, because I had been doing that for a lot of my friends. And so their videos would get millions of views because I was like, okay, we have to have this like certain, this certain way about doing it. And at the time, again, it's 2014, it was like those bright saturated colors. It was like my morning routine as a college student, like just the girly things. And so I applied that in my own realm with photography. And after that, I graduated college in like 2016, I think, or 2017, I don't, 2016. And then I moved back to New York in 2017. And that's when I went full time with photography. And up until then, I had been working in e-commerce. And that was my 8th year in e-commerce. And I was able to map out a plan of how I wanted to get back to New York and how I was going to make doing photography full time work. And so it wasn't just me moving back and then going full time. It had been about a year of getting traction, continuing to go back and forth to New York to photograph clients. I just stay at my friend's house because that's where a lot of my friends were from college. And so it wasn't instantaneous. It wasn't a spontaneous decision. It really took about a year and a half of mapping out. And that's something that I teach on my platforms, is that you need to use wisdom when making the shift in working for yourself. And I know you teach that in where you decided that if you needed to, if you wanted to go full time with content creation and blogging, then you need to be able to match your corporate salary. And I think that's really refreshing to hear, because so much of what we see on social media makes it look like people were able to just make the decision, quit their job and go for it, when that's not always true, but people don't always talk about that. And I think it's a really important reminder.
For sure. And I'm so glad that you touched on that and that you said, hey, like I had been thinking about moving back to the city and like, you know, coming up with a plan, like continuing to work with clients in New York, right? Because just what you said, right? I think a lot of times we just see that announcement where it's like, I'm taking this full time. But what people don't see is like all that internal planning that happens. And I always tell other creators, especially on this podcast, I say, hey, your financial well-being is your health and well-being, right? And just having, it's not that you have to have like every month planned out about how much money you want to make, but more, it's more like, okay, how can you get ahead of it and make sure that you're going to be taken care of financially, where you won't be in this place of like scrambling, desperation, right? You want to be, there's already so much that goes into pursuing a photography business or a content creation career, right? So if you can at least like help set yourself up, just like give yourself that confidence and that little bit of success, if you're able to like plan ahead financially, then I think it's very helpful. And so as you kind of, I mean, you know, you've described like your back and forth between Seattle and New York. Did you have a moment when you were like, all right, I'm going to be a professional photographer? Or was that just gradual as you were kind of flowing back and forth between the West Coast and the East Coast and, you know, navigating your way through school?
So I realized the last year of college for me that photography is what I wanted to do full time, but that in order to be able to really pursue it, where I could have the clientele that I wanted with branding, photographers, a lot of content creators and bloggers and engagement sessions, I should look into moving back to New York City soon. I knew that I always wanted to go back. I was really sad to leave. And I tried everything to be able to just stay, but it wasn't God's plan for me. But the kind of clientele, at least at the time in Seattle, was more of family photography and weddings. And I was doing weddings, and I actually had booked a wedding back in New York, and it was my first wedding outside of the Northwest area. And that's when it kind of clicked for me that I could 100% do this, but it would require me mapping out the steps to be able to make the move and not just go back and forth with trips. So that's when I realized I wanted to do it full time and that I wanted to do it back in New York. And because of the relationships I had already built there and my communities there through school, also online as well, and through my church, that's where I already had established a clientele even more so than Seattle because of the kind of photography I wanted to do.
So what challenges did you face early on when you started pursuing photography? Was it like trying to figure out like your focus, or was it finding clients? I'm always curious to hear just like early on in people's journeys, what challenges they face.
The first thing that popped into my mind when you asked that is the money aspect, because camera equipment is expensive and you have a lot of people online, at least, telling you that in order to be successful, you have to have the latest and greatest camera. You need to be upgrading. Thankfully, I didn't have the money to continue investing in different kinds of lenses and gear. So thank God for that. But it was a challenge just in terms of comparison, comparing what I had against what other people had. But it taught me a really important lesson that I try to teach and emphasize to other photographers, is that that's just simply marketing. That's like consumerism culture. You know, we live in a society kind of vibes. And that all of those things can be distractions if you let them. In terms of, instead of spending $4,000 on a whole new camera setup, why don't you spend some of that money towards Facebook ads to get more leads, or towards hiring a copywriter for a few months to be able to create an email sequence for you. There's so many other ways that you can put your resources into that don't have to be the actual physical tools, because chances are your camera is just fine. And you'll know when it is genuinely time to upgrade your equipment. But a lot of the times we just get caught up in the consumerism of it, and we just have to be a conscious consumer and put your blinders on. So I would advise anybody who is just starting out and you're kind of in that same situation and facing that challenge of like, oh my gosh, I just need to upgrade to this new camera. Instead, really evaluate, is that what's going to improve your business? Or is bringing on a virtual assistant or somebody who can set up your client management program, have it all automated, is that a better way that would actually further your business?
For sure. I think a great follow-up question with this, especially as we're talking about equipment. Starting out, you do need something to start with, right? So what camera did you start with, and when did you know it was time to upgrade?
I was shooting with a Canon 5D Mark II, which I got secondhand, and it was an amazing camera. I used it for photo, and then I also used it for filming my YouTube videos. And when I started doing more YouTube videos, I realized that it was actually time to upgrade. More so than like the photo aspect, because the Mark line from Canon, the Mark 5D line, is an incredible powerhouse line. It's what I would recommend to people starting out. If you can swing a higher price point of a mirrorless camera, that's a whole different type of camera, but it has more technology basically in it. It's a higher price point. The quality's good in terms of it's faster to focus, whatever. But if you are on a budget and you want a camera that can sustain you for 3 years while you work towards saving towards that new technology, the 5D line from Canon is great. So the reason being with the videos is that you couldn't autofocus where you sit down and then the camera would recognize, detect your face, and then focus for you. So my siblings would come in and I'd be like, can you come and focus the camera for me? And then they would press it down and get it in focus. And so it just became a bit of a hassle. And the Mark IV had recently come out and I had been really thinking about it. And so I made the jump and I invested in the Mark IV, which was two steps up from the Mark II. I sold my Mark II. I put that money towards the camera, and then all the lenses worked together, so I didn't have to change lenses at all. And then I still am using it to this day. I believe I got it in 2016, I think. And it's an incredible camera. And so lots of other professional photographers still use and love the Mark IV. So I would definitely recommend it. I wouldn't recommend the Mark II anymore just because the video, and it's definitely much, much older, but it's still a great camera.
That's awesome. And again, I'm glad you outlined, like, because again, I think it's easy to be like, oh, I see this other photographer with this other camera, but it's like when you actually recognize that you had a need for it and you were like, oh, okay, actually I can't always have a sibling come sit in front of the camera to like autofocus this. Like, what if it's just me at home? And so, I'm glad that you at least discussed like, hey, you'll know when it's actually time for you to upgrade. So I thought it'd be fun to jump into building your brand and business. And I feel like we can take this conversation so many ways, but I thought it would be relevant for our podcast listeners to talk about what social media channels did you initially start out with to market yourself?
Instagram, and then YouTube ended up being a channel that I used to market myself without really knowing. So with Instagram, I would just post my client work. So engagements, branding photos. I was doing a lot of senior photography as well at the time. And YouTube, I was just teaching other photographers. And so I had these photographers would see me on YouTube. And then because I was living in New York City where a lot of people come to vacation. So they would book me when they're in town or they're coming to vacation and they're graduating from high school or college and they want to do their senior graduation photos in New York. So YouTube ended up being a platform that was a form of advertising without me directly having to advertise.
That's awesome. I was going to say, it's funny that like you discovered, and I'm sure plenty of other photographers in New York City know this, but like, that's like really common for people to like graduate or go on a trip and they're like, let's go to New York. Let's take photos. Yeah. Like, especially since it's such a big bucket list city for not just people in the US, but for like, you know, around the world, right? People are searching like for, you know, where to take photos in New York City and also like searching for photographers because chances are it's usually like a big milestone or a family trip or a bucket list trip. And so that's awesome that you already had that like platform established. And then again, it was already advertising for you, even though that it probably wasn't your intention right away. And so I do want to kind of dive into YouTube just a little bit. When did you start on YouTube again?
I think it's been almost 10 years.
That's amazing.
Like 2012 kind of thing. Uh-huh. Because I started it by using it as an outlet to talk about fashion because I was going to community college after my trade school in high school. And I was then going to design school the next year, but I really wanted an outlet to be able to use to talk about my interest of fashion. And I had a pretty good idea of how to utilize social media and how to leverage it. And so if I wanted to create a YouTube account that was talking about fashion at the time where I would be recommended to girls who are watching other more popular YouTube girls, then I would kind of need to tailor the content. And so I just researched what was really popular outside of the Northwest, because in the Northwest, we have a very specific like style, at least at the time, like lots of flannels, hiking, more hipster, whereas the rest of the population for the most part was a bit different. And so I knew that, well, first off, my personal style didn't necessarily align with that like hipster vibe. I was drawn to more of the colorful things. And so brands like Lilly Pulitzer and things like Monograms, those were all so popular from what the other girls were sharing. And so my room was already very colorful. My personal style was already like that. And so I just really went for it with that direction. And I did a couple of different tutorials for like hair that I knew would get like views. And I made them very like short and sweet. So like how to do a top knot if you have very short hair, like the top knot was a really popular style at the time. And so that is how I got started on the platform, was with a strategy and like what was popular. And now that kind of strategy wouldn't work because, or in the sense that you don't want to do what everyone else is doing with their style. But at the time, that was what I like strategized and was like, this is something that already aligns with me, these bright colors, instead of leading into the style that's around me in my local area in the Pacific Northwest, I should go with what the rest of the population is kind of doing. And like now you want to be able to have way more of a personal brand because you don't want to be like everybody else. But again, at the time, what was this, like 2012, 2013? And so then later on, I did my first video on photography and was able to transition from talking about like fashion and talking more about photography.
That's awesome. So today, I know you're still very active on YouTube. How often are you posting on it? And then what type of content do you predominantly create?
So I try to post once a week. There's definitely a couple, like, let's just say, actually, you know what? Let's say 3 videos a month, because I typically do 3 photography tutorials at least a month for sure, always. And then like a vlog or 2 vlogs. I actually just hired an editor for vlogs, and that's taken a lot off of my plate because I love sharing more of my personal life and sharing behind the scenes of my photography. And so she does 3 vlogs a month for me. So it's kind of come up a bit, but I would say when it comes to photography, 3 videos a month, and what that content looks like is behind the scenes of photo shoots, where I'm either just sharing like my commentary of posing with a model, we're just doing something and you get to kind of come along, or it's something like working with a client, so somebody who doesn't have as much posing experience, and I'm teaching you on like 5 ways to pose men or 5 ways to pose couples. It's more instructional. A type of video I also would do more is in the past is like sit down education video, like 6 questions to ask a client before booking them. Now I've shifted that into podcast. At least that's my plan. I've been doing a lot of guest episodes on my podcast, but I'm like, the more sit down videos, I have a lot more to talk about. And YouTube, even though it's a longer format in terms of, or in comparison to TikTok or Instagram, when it comes to you're teaching a lesson, people are more likely going to be able to enjoy the content and be able to really digest it when it's in a podcast episode, because you're prepared like, okay, this is going to be 45 minutes. I can listen to this in the car. I can only scratch the surface a little bit on an 8-minute educational YouTube video like that, that I'm like, you know what? I should just leverage this into podcasts, because then I can really speak much more in depth on each point. So those are the different types of videos that I'll do. You know, I'll do like lens comparisons or like camera comparisons, but that kind of falls within working with models. And I really love it.
I'm so glad. And I'm thank you so much for just like breaking down the different types of content you create, because I think sometimes like one thing I do on the podcast is I talk about saying, hey, like, it's not that you have to talk about one thing forever, but within the photography niche, you can literally take it so many ways. You can do educational types of videos, like what you said, right? Going in depth, questions to ask a client. You can also show the behind the scenes, because I think like, if I were, you know, someone who wanted to do senior photos, but you're like nervous, you're like, I don't even know like what that looks like to like work with a client and stuff, like seeing it, you know, done, and you can just like watch through, right? I think it really shows real examples. And again, you're still creating like diverse types of content within photography, but there's always like a variety that you can explore. So, oh my gosh, I feel like you're, especially when I look at your website, I'm like, she does so much. How has your photography business evolved since you've started?
Since the pandemic is when I shifted into education so much more. So like it evolved in terms of when I first started 2017 and went full time, I was doing clients like, you know, clients like every weekend, almost every, like so many days of the week, whatever. And then I was doing YouTube, but it was a lower priority. I was still coming out with videos like basically once a week, but most of my work was client focused, not so much education focused. But when the pandemic happened a couple of years later, there was a major shift because I was no longer working with clients in person because of the pandemic. And so I really put all of my energy into honing in on education and YouTube videos. That was for about like 1.5 years. And then once the vaccine came out and I felt more comfortable working with clients and then they felt more comfortable with me, I went back to that. But I realized that I was able to pivot my business so much online that I could be even more like specific with the types of photo shoots I want to book. So instead of taking on senior photos and bloggers, content creation, and branding and engagements, I started booking engagements and branding kind of thing. And I would take on like one or two, you know, projects, but it was mostly going from like four different types of subjects. And then when I was in New York, it was even more because I was trying to pay my rent because rent was so much more expensive than here. I was able to live with my family, you know, that kind of thing. So I niched down even more with just engagements and branding. And then I would occasionally take on some other like projects, but mostly those two because that's what I was posting. That's what I was sharing. That was what I was blogging and doing galleries of. And so now I'm taking my business a different direction where I'm going to start offering higher ticket branding sessions where like everything is included, hair, makeup, transportation, whatever it might be. And so my business is always evolving, but it has been really fun to be able to grow the education more online.
I love that. And so I mean, I did a little bit of research just on your website, and I know one community that you've built is Build and Bloom. So can you share with our listeners what is Build and Bloom and what inspired you to create it?
So Build and Bloom started out as a photography Facebook group, and it still is a photography Facebook group where people of all levels are able to join and ask questions without judgment. The reason why I started the Facebook group is because I was a part of a couple different types of photography groups, and they were very judgmental, very serious, and kind of low-key bullies in some way. Not necessarily the groups themselves, but the attitude, like, that wasn't really cultivated in the group. It was just kind of all over the place. It was a little bit like toxic vibes. People were not the most friendly. And it might not have been like the individual members. It wasn't necessarily, and it wasn't necessarily the group itself, but it was the overall environment that had been created because it wasn't built on inclusivity, encouragement, or just being a place to help. It was more a place to show your work and then judge other people for their questions. And so I was like, you know what? There is a huge gap that I can fill by creating a place that is kind, encouraging, inclusive, very like basic components, and a place that's a beginner friendly as well. Because with these groups in the past, I'm sure a lot has changed. But in these groups in the past, like, you had very professional, established photographers, a lot of like older boomer photographers who had been in the game for a long time. But with that, there was a bit of, if you were younger and you shared your work, you were kind of up for more like scrutiny, whatever it might be, especially Gen Z. I can imagine from the perspective of somebody who's been doing this for so long, and then they've put so much time and effort into developing their skill and their craft and their eye. But then when you see somebody who is so much younger, who didn't go to college, maybe they, you know, they went to college for it, they spent the time and the money. But now, because it's so much more accessible, you can view it one of two ways. You could view it as, this is amazing, and people, this is low barrier to entry now, and we should celebrate people being able to make income from this medium. Or you can have bitterness in your heart and be like, you know, how are they able to make money on something that I only recently was able to start making money from? I have been doing this for so much longer. They're having it more easy. It's all about your perspective and the posture of your heart. And so that was kind of a lot of the perspective in those older Facebook groups back in the day. So I started Build and Bloom, and it took off automatically because there was a huge need for an inclusive and kind community. And I used YouTube to be able to market it and have people join. And then at the time too, this had to be like 2016. Meetups were really popular in other photography communities, and younger photography communities kind of came out of these kind of Facebook groups as well. I think they're a lot of people saw the need for it. And they would do in-person meetups. And so we got questions and people asking, can we do them? And I said, no, but we can do workshops. We can do something in person, but there has to be direction, because otherwise it can create an environment of comparison. You know, you bring models, you bring people coming together and being able to shoot, but when there's no clear direction or purpose behind it other than just to shoot, I can see that it's very hard to create an intentional environment, because you're going to have other young people looking at one person who, you know, maybe their parents paid for their whole camera and setup, and then you're comparing yourself and because you have something older, whatever it might be. Because again, at the time, we're all super young. We're like 20, 21, 19, whatever. So we did workshops that were free, like these meetups. I mean, some of these meetups you still had to pay for, which is kind of silly, but these workshops were free. We had the space donated to us, and there would be a speaker from the city so that there's a touch point by the time we left. We would teach on like something basic for marketing, and it was just a way to be able to cultivate people together and bring a community together, but with intention. So I used to work in youth ministry, and that involved like doing a lot of events with youth groups. And so I was able to utilize what I had. I had a fortunate experience with youth group and with youth ministry, and I'm very grateful for it. I know that's not the same for everybody. But I was able to use what I learned for events in the Build and Bloom meetup. So for example, we wouldn't really have people like mingling before, because a lot of people are nervous, introverted, shy. And that is just like my worst nightmare. Like I will come to events later because I don't want to sit there and like talk, like I'm not going to talk to strangers because I'm so shy. And these are artists, these are photographers. So a lot of them are in that same boat. So we would immediately start. I'd make sure to introduce myself to everybody as everybody's sitting down, shake my hand, you know, introduce myself to every single person. And then we'd get straight into the program about like 10 minutes after the start time, right? So it starts at noon. Everyone gets there at noon. We start immediately. And then people have something to talk about afterwards. So they not only have all this common ground of being interested in creative media, but they also now can talk about what they learned. So everything was very intentional. And then we also did something called Sister Sister, which was a monthly networking group for young girls interested in media. And it was in at one point 16 cities around the states, met once a month. We would talk about one, the same, like we would have basically curriculum. So everybody would talk about the same topic that had to do with like job skills. One time we brought in somebody who is a financial expert. And so she talked about like, what's a credit card? What does a interest rate mean? Basics that were not taught in the American school system, to be able to equip young girls with these types of skills. And they didn't even have to be interested in photography. It could just be a hobby. They could be interested in different kind of creative medium. It was just a way to be able to bring girls together outside of a school or church setting. And I definitely know that I want to continue with Sister Sister, possibly in 2024. It's a huge passion of mine. And I think that's because I'm really passionate about like youth ministry, but in a way that's outside the church. So that's what Build and Bloom is.
That is amazing. Can I do a quick rewind? So today, is it still you just organizing everything? Or do you have a team, someone you work with? What is that? This is a lot of work.
It wasn't just me. It was a team of like five or six people throughout Build and Bloom with the workshops, and then with Sister Sister. And then we wrapped everything up in July 2019. I was moving away from New York back to Seattle in August 2019, and things had slowed down. We were finished with the Build and Bloom workshops. We were still doing Sister Sister, but we took it as a opportunity to kind of take a summer break and regroup. And then COVID happened. And so now with Build and Bloom, we're not doing workshops anymore. We're not doing Sister Sister anymore, though that is something that I would love to do again in like 2024 or something. But now it's just online with the Facebook group and with the podcast. So it's myself. And then I also have a virtual assistant named Kat, who is my community manager for Build and Bloom. So she'll like approve the posts and do a lot of like the Facebook moderation, which is something that would take like me hours a day I'd spend at least 3 hours minimum within the Facebook group, approving posts, approving members, putting them into the email sequence, everything like that. So having brought her on allows me to focus on other areas of my business. But to answer the question, when all of that was running with Build and Bloom, no, it wasn't just me. It was like 5, 6, even sometimes 7 people.
Okay. I'm so glad you broke it down, because I sometimes think, again, it's like really easy to do this, whether you're like an influencer or photographer, right? You might look at someone and be like, oh my God, they do all of that on their own. It's like, no, actually, you know, they have a virtual assistant, they have a friend, they have another photographer, you know, network or group of people that they work with. And so thanks for at least just like sharing real quickly, you know, like what your team has looked like as you've explored different things.
And with Build and Bloom, that all was like nonprofit. We actually got registered as nonprofit towards the tail end of 2019. But all of it was volunteer, because all of the workshops were free. Sister Sister was free. So it wasn't a business. And so that's also what enabled us to be able to have more people. Like, I wouldn't have, like, now with my own business and online stuff, there's no way I'd be able to have like 6 or 7 people doing different roles, because I just don't have the financial ability to do that. But with Build and Bloom, like, one person would help in this way, you know, and maybe it would help. It would be like a couple hours, mm-hmm. a week, a month, whatever it might look like. People, we would have different roles and people would volunteer their time, and they were welcome to volunteer as much or as little as they wanted to. And so it might sound like, oh my gosh, 7 people. Wow. Like, that's crazy. It's important to remember that it's all like, that is nonprofit. My business looks very different. It's just me and my virtual assistant. And then like occasionally I'll have a copywriter who's super awesome to help. But yeah.
Gotcha. And so today, what does your business look like? There's a photography piece, YouTube, education. Can you just give us like a quick breakdown of what it looks like?
Okay. Yes. So in 2023, for my business, I have a video editor who edits the vlogs. She's amazing. And I've only recently brought her on as of April. And when we're recording this podcast, it's May. So it's only been a month. And so before her, though, I did have an incredible video editor who would help me with behind the scenes and sit down videos. But she ended up getting so booked out and like busy. And so we paused working together. And also I was like, you know what, I can do this on my own. And I could, and I want to bring her back. I texted her recently and I'm like, do you have any availability? She's like, okay, I'll let you know like in the next couple of months or so. But she would take quite a bit off of my plate in terms of editing. But now, video editor, and then I have my virtual assistant, Kat, who helps with the Facebook group. And she also, though, will coordinate like podcast recordings. She'll coordinate like questions for the podcast. She'll help with so many different components of my business. She'll actually answer like Instagram DMs for me. Any kind of like, if there's a lead on Instagram of somebody who wants to book me, she'll be able to funnel them into the correct place for that. Book me for like photography services. And then I just had to cut back with, I had an amazing girl who was doing copywriting for me for blog posts, emails, and then she was also doing social media posts in terms of like memes and then like more call to action captions. But I just went to the emergency room last month and I don't have good insurance. And so I have a huge emergency room bill. So I had to actually let her go to be able to pay for that bill. And yeah, so that's
life of a
but she was
creative, yeah. And a freelancer. Things happen. Yeah.
Yes. But that was, she was so amazing, but it wasn't like a necessary component of my business. And she's created so much incredible content for like those captions and everything that I wasn't even posting half of what she was doing because it was like so overwhelming. So it worked out fine. And once I am able to, I'll definitely bring her back 100%. But that's kind of what it looks like. And then for my actual like Instagram brand collaborations for me as a influencer on that end, I'm a part of a talent agency. And so I have a manager who coordinates all of those like emails and brand deals and stuff like that.
So yeah, you have a really diverse and balanced part of the business because you're not only like a professional photographer, but you also have like an established YouTube and Instagram, and you also work with brands in that way. So I appreciate you kind of showing both sides. All right. I can't believe we're coming to the end of the interview already. And so as we wrap things up, what advice do you have for photographers wanting to get started today?
So my advice would be to try to bring yourself as offline as you can when it comes to looking for inspiration. So let's say that you're wanting to put together a styled photo shoot, something creative and for fun. Don't look to Pinterest for your inspiration. Go to an antique store and just see what you're naturally drawn to, whether it's color schemes or styling. And the reason why I say to bring yourself as much offline as possible is because it's really easy for us to get caught up in a comparison game, whether it's on Instagram with other photographers and their work or with what they have equipment-wise. You know, I'm seeing a lot of people starting to unbox these new mirrorless cameras that I just simply can't afford. And so something that I will also do and encourage you to do is to limit your social media usage when it comes to scrolling. I mute tons of people because I don't want to look at their camera unboxing and I just can't afford it. So why am I going to expose myself to potentially feeling jealous or like not enough about what they have and what I don't have? The best way to combat comparison is through gratefulness. But what are those steps in action? It's muting people on Instagram if you need to. It's not going on Pinterest for inspiration, rather looking in person. I have a couple of different resources about how to limit social media usage and how to leverage it, actually, because social media is such a powerful tool, but so often we can get caught up in the comparison game. And so that would be my number one advice for somebody starting out in their business.
I love that. And I'm so glad you kind of shared that insight, because even as creators, right, it's like obviously we use social media, we share, you know, the different people we've worked with, brands we've worked with, behind the scenes. But at the same time, like as a consumer of social media, you can be more mindful. And I'm with you on that. It's like, it's okay to mute creators or mute other people where it's like, you know what, this type of content doesn't make me feel good. So I'm just going to like, you know, be more mindful about the content I consume. And so, what are your favorite cameras? I'm sure you get this question a lot. So
my favorite camera of all time is the Canon 5D Mark IV. It's an older camera. I believe it came out in 2015 or something. I've had it since 2016, I think, maybe even earlier, 24. I don't know. I've had it for a really long time and I love it because it's a powerhouse camera. It's great for photo and for video. And because it's so old now, it's a lot more affordable of a price point than the newer mirrorless cameras we're seeing come out. So newer cameras like the R6, the R10, the R5, those are all great, amazing cameras from Canon. I would get them if I was able to afford it in a way that's not taking away from my house payment, my car payment, you know, if I just had all the money in the world, right? But the Mark IV is an amazing camera that is adaptable to all stages that you're at with photography. So whether you're just starting out and you're going to be using very basic settings, it will grow with you and grow with your skill set. And you can get it for, I mean, I think you can get it for under $2,000 at this point. A place I love to go for camera gear is called KEH. It's KEH.com, and it's a place where you can buy used equipment. So everything is hundreds of dollars off because it's lightly used. So I would recommend to creators to look into the Mark IV from Canon. It has Wi-Fi, so you can connect your phone to it to take self-portraits if you need to with like the app. It also, you can drag in, or you can also send the photos directly to your phone, whatever that looks like for you. And it's great with video. It's not going to be the most incredible with video because it's a bit older, but it does facial tracking. It can shoot in 4K, I believe. It's a great camera.
That's awesome. All right, Jessica, so where can our listeners go to learn more about you and connect with you?
So if you just go to my website, jessicawhitaker.co, that's where you can find my Instagram, my YouTube channel, Build and Bloom, and lots of free resources if you are interested in photography. But Instagram or YouTube are also just at Jessica Whitaker.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Jessica, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate, review, and recommend the podcast to a friend. If we haven't connected on Instagram yet, you can find us at Emma's Edition and at The Creative Edition. Sign up for our email newsletter and join our Facebook group, and we'll see you guys next time.